Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at climate and weather today on the show with our two guests, our weather guys, John Martin and Steve Ackerman, back with us, and we'll be talking with them in just a minute or two. But Jill Nadeau is horned into the studio, fought her way in.
Yep. I couldn't leave it. I've been here so often lately, Larry.
She's been filled in for me last week. Well, I suffered from a cold, so you might hear me cough once in a while, and I hope you'll forgive me for that, because I had to come and talk today because it's listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio, our fun drive. This year-end member drive is on, and I want you to think about how much you've learned from and enjoyed WPR programs in this past year. And here we've got 2023 right around the corner. Take some action now and give the programs you rely on a strong start in the new year at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you can make an even greater impact when you give right now, because we're going to release $25,000 when 500 people, including you, make a gift in support of WPR programs by the end of the day tomorrow.
So it's a great group of generous members. They've created this Giving Tuesday challenge, kind of to support your support, inspire your support of the programs you and your entire community rely on.
So let's meet the challenge. Your gift of any amount now makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We are committed to quality, and that's why we've been around for more than 100 years, I think. And since listener donations, we didn't have listener donations 100 years ago.
No, but we did not.
We do right now, and they make up the largest piece of funding for our programs. That quality is possible thanks to you.
And contrary to what you might think, Larry has not been around for 100 years. It just feels like it. Your contribution makes this program possible and so many others as well. When you give, you're part of the quality you hear every day on WPR. Make a difference right now with your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, many listeners become donors out of a sense of a shared commitment, because you think of WPR as a resource that should be available to everyone. And because you yourself have been getting value out of it over the past year or two or more, time to put something back in.
For sure. So make a donation. You know, this is really for yourself, too, but also for the community. The amount is up to you. The important thing is that you participate. So make your first ever gift of, say, $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Black Friday and Cyber Monday are about shopping and finding the best deals. And tomorrow, Giving Tuesday, is about supporting the organizations that have a positive impact on our communities and the world. Join the movement with your gift for WPR's essential public service. Your gift ensures you and your community have access to independent journalism, diverse perspectives, and world-class music on Wisconsin Public Radio. Jumpstart your Giving Tuesday generosity today with your gift now. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation during our drive. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. The WPR programs you enjoy are possible thanks to your support. And your contribution, that might be $10 a month, could be $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, it makes a difference for our entire community.
It definitely does. And supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with just a few minutes of your time. All we need is your name, your contact information, and how much you'd like to give and how you'd like to pay.
And your gift supports the programs and stories that keep you connected to the world. So give right now at WPR.org. or at 888-202-2552.
And as a reminder, a group of generous members will give $25,000 in challenge funds when 500 people, hopefully including you, step up to support the programs you count on by end of day Tuesday.
And choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You'll make a difference for WPR and provide hunger relief to people in your community.
If you're a sustaining member making ongoing monthly gifts, thank you. Make today the day that you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month or whatever amount that you choose at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. William in Milwaukee says, I'm an everyday listener benefiting in so many ways from your programming. It and the people who deliver the service deserve my support. Thank you, William.
Your gift right now, so important. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Time to turn our attention to climate and weather with our guest, John Martin, professor and former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW. John, good to have you back.
Good to be here, Larry. Happy holidays.
And also, excuse me, Steve Ackerman. Steve, Vice Chancellor for Research and Grad Education at UW-Madison, also a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Steve, welcome back.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
I think I need some water, too. Excuse me. Yeah, we might be hacking our way through this. I tell you what, we had some pretty wintry weather here in southern Wisconsin, in Madison. It snowed 5 days straight. We got about 4.5 inches. A few days before, the temperature had reached the 70s. What's often the cause of these dynamic shifts in temperature?
Yeah, this month is one of the most famous months of the year around here in terms of the way the weather can change on a dime. There have been several historic, we might have talked about this last time, several historic November events that have had huge temperature swings, temperatures from the 70s and 80s in some instances down into the teens. We didn't get quite that extreme in that 1 week, but boy, we had the Thursday afternoon, I think it was 71 degrees.
70 degree, yeah.
And it was the fifth day that we were over 70 in the month, which
That's
was unusual.
Amazing.
And then we had 5 straight days on which it snowed. Only on a couple of days did it accumulate. But at least there was snow, visible snow flying around on 5 straight days right after that. Pretty amazing.
I think the snow was visible in Buffalo, New
Yes,
York.
I would think.
I think it's still visible.
Right. I don't think there's any way that couldn't have been the case.
You had 6 feet of snow.
Incredible.
How did our weather relate any to their weather?
In some ways, it's a relationship. Yeah. Now, a couple of things go on at the beginning of the snow season everywhere in the Lakes region. That it finally gets cold enough that when it precipitates, it has a high chance of falling as snow. That's one thing. And that doesn't happen around here until the middle of November, usually, on average. So just about the same time of year, it's cold enough in the eastern part of the Lake State, so western New York State. But the lakes themselves have already had a temperature drop from their maximum temperature that they probably get to in the middle of August. But it hasn't been cold enough for that warm lake to turn its evaporated water into snowflakes. It's probably had some lake effect rain or something in October. But finally, the combination's perfect where the lakes are still warm, especially Lake Erie in Ontario. I think Lake Erie is the shallowest of the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
It's a bubbling cauldron by the time early November comes along. And if you get a really good cold snap, you're going to evaporate tons of water off the lake, and as soon as the wind slows down upon reaching the land, this convergence forces it to rise and turns into snow. And record events almost always occur in November when they're going to occur. And I think Buffalo's recent one rivaled but didn't quite break the record from November of 2014, where 7 feet of snow fell in some places in suburbs of Buffalo.
I just can't imagine.
It's incredible.
Just incredible.
How do you live there?
How do you not? I mean, I would think that would be the number one tourist destination for a person like me. I'd love to be there. Although I must say, it would drive me crazy that if I bought a house in Buffalo, almost surely I would be on a record event. I'd be in the wrong neighborhood. So there'd be two inches of snow for me and 6 feet for my neighbor down the road.
You can join in, too, by the way, with your questions and comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Question or comment, I hope you'll join in the conversation. Hurricane season is the time of year when the tropical cyclones form, right?
It's over tomorrow, and it you know, has its season from June 1st to November 30th. Mm. And much like the lake effect snowfalls, the reason is because that's when the temperatures in the Atlantic are warm enough to generate it. And so it ends tomorrow, in theory. I don't think there's anything on the horizon that would go beyond that. But
I wish I had checked. I saw something on the satellite today that looked very interesting to the east of Bermuda. So I don't know what it is.
I mean, that's just climatologically. It doesn't mean they can occur in December.
Right.
And this year has been pretty average with 14 named storms. Mm-hmm. And three major ones, three major hurricanes, which means sustained winds are more than 111 miles per hour, which is...
That's moving right along.
That's quite a strong
beastly.
Wind.
That's beastly.
Yeah, so we're not expecting... And there's nothing that you've seen, doesn't look like there's any more coming.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it closely because I was just thinking, well, it's over.
But with the exception of what I saw on a satellite this morning and didn't have time to check it out, no. I think 1984 there was a hurricane in December, Category 1, Hurricane Josephine or something. I don't think it hit land, but there have been a few maybe that have gotten under the wire past December 1st.
And Josephine, then, that's not many named storms. That's right.
There would only be, about 10 or so that year? Yeah.
Well, I know the National Association of Atmospheric Administration's Climate Prediction Center, in May, they forecasted above-average amount of hurricanes for this year.
And we were just about average.
Yeah.
So I think they were forecasting a little bit above average. Mm. And this year we were just pretty close to average.
How do they make their predictions? So, I mean, we're talking...
In May, right. They're making the prediction in May.
For something that might happen in November.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially how good they're getting, though.
Yeah. There are some primary guides that I think they can hedge with some confidence that it's either going to be a much less than normal season, or after that, you know, it's a little bit less obvious what the answer might be. But the little less than normal season might be the easier one to call than the one that's average or above average.
Steve Ackerman, John Martin, our weather guys with us. Again, you can join in with your weather question or our climate question at 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. A listener, it was Bob from Eau Claire, emailed you guys about mesonets. Is that right?
Mesonets. Yeah.
Mesonets.
Yeah.
What are mesonets?
So it's a combination of two words. I forget what you technically call that when you take two words. In this case, it's mesoscale, which in weather terms, that's storms on the size of about a mile to 150 miles. And a network. And so you put those together and you have a mesonet, which means relatively high density observations of weather. And it began in the 80s in Oklahoma.
Yeah, this is glorious. Their Oklahoma mesonet is glorious.
It's just standard. And they were using it not just for severe weather forecasting, but also for agricultural forecasting, because they also have not just weather observations, but soil temperature and soil moisture observation. So it's really good for monitoring drought. And the USDA will provide drought relief if you can demonstrate that you're actually in a drought. Bad news is, or sort of bad news, is Wisconsin does not have a mesonet. And so that puts us at a disadvantage of actually proving that we're in a drought and thus getting relief from USDA.
Oh.
But that's going to change because I've been working with a professor in agronomy, Chris Kucharek, who's been interested in this for a long time, as well as I have been. And last year I had some resources from WARF, the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, which provides our office with a lot of resources to invest in research, provided us enough money, about $1 million, to purchase equipment, so enough equipment to put in each of our 72 counties.
Excellent.
And then this year we got funding from USDA, another $2.3 million on top of that, to actually do the installation. So Chris is leading the effort in that, and it looks like by this time next year we'll have stations in place, not all of them, but a majority of them in place, and we'll be able to do some really good research.
Yeah.
And not just weather research, but also agricultural research.
Yeah. Now, think about this, Larry. This relates to your prior question about how do you get those big temperature swings. We'll be able to resolve the kind of features that bring that kind of temperature drop with remarkable clarity compared to what we've had in the past. I can't wait for something like that to happen.
When the do ratios go through, yeah, for example, we'll actually be able to measure that and yeah. move along, not just watch.
Beautiful.
Them.
Looking forward to that. And, of course, I'm always looking forward to Jill Nadeau when she comes marching through the door. And she has marched through the door. And we'll be talking about some of those Maisonettes a bit more. And, of course, taking your questions as well. I see Mike from Madison. Hang on, Mike. We'll be with you in just a minute. But we're in our year-end member drive. Your chance to support the programs you count on every day. And your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important as we end this year and look forward to 2023.
Absolutely. Today is the start of a special two-day Giving Tuesday challenge. A group of very generous members will give $25,000 in matching funds when 500 people, hopefully with you included, step up to support the programs that you count on.
It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting the WPR programs that inform and inspire you and the entire state of Wisconsin.
Certainly do, and states around it. So we hit a lot of people. Your participation, see, it's I'm thinking precipitation because the weather guys are here. Your participation now is vital. So be one of the 500 people to meet this challenge before end of day tomorrow. Join the Giving Tuesday celebration now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
End of the year, you know, it's a great time to reflect on what you value. And the discussions you enjoy every day on the Ideas Network have been an important part of your life, maybe all year long and maybe beyond that. So, good idea. Make your year-end gift right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. To stand up for what you value.
That's right. Become a sustainer while you're at it. Choose a monthly gift amount to come from your bank account or your credit card. It'll continue for as long as you like.
Because WPR is one of those things you never want to live without, make your support ongoing. You could do a sustaining gift. It's convenient, very flexible. You can get started right now, maybe $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I'm Michelle Orge, President and CEO of Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. Second Harvest has been providing food support in our community since 1986. Our vision is that everyone in our community has enough nutritious food to thrive. $10 helps provide 25 meals. And beyond the meals that it provides, it will help kids learn in school and families to stretch their budget to help make ends meet.
Support WPR programs and provide hunger relief in your community. Ask for your food bank thank you gift when you give $10 or $20 a month. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Listener support's the biggest source of funding for our shows, and that's why your gift, $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, has an important impact.
And it makes an even greater impact right now when you give because $25,000 will be released when 500 people make a gift in support of WPR programmings by end of day tomorrow.
Group of generous supporters have created this Giving Tuesday challenge to inspire your support of the programs you and your entire community rely on.
So let's meet the challenge. Your gift of any amount now makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Certainly want to thank you if you're a sustaining member already of WPR, making those ongoing monthly donations. Because of your support, very reliable support, we're able to plan for the future in a better way.
And as 2022 draws to a close, which I can't believe that it's actually the end of the year already, and you think about how important WPR is in your life, considering increasing your donation by maybe $5 or $10 a month. It's really easy to do, and it really does make a difference. Just go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And, of course, that challenge is still in effect when 500 people make that gift. By the end of the day tomorrow, it's $25,000 from generous members will be secured for the programs that you rely on.
And you can provide hunger relief in your area. Ask for one of the food bank thank you gifts with your donation of $10 or $20 a month. It starts with your contribution at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Great time to become a sustaining member. It's easy to set up. It's convenient. You get ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or maybe your credit card. You can get started right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And this in from Mary in Brookfield, Larry. She says, I try to work my schedule around Fridays at 11 to catch Larry's garden talk. I learned so much. And Cheryl in Madison says, I wouldn't know what to do without you.
Oh, Cheryl and Mary, thank you both so much. And thank you if you've already contributed. If you haven't, really, a good time to do it would be right now. Make a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Climate and weather on our minds today on the show with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Great to have them back. Certainly, if you have a question or a comment, I hope you'll join in. Number to call 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas at WPR.org. Mike and Madison, we'll let you join in. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So I'm wondering if your guest has any experience or knowledge in the global cooling, the regular appearance of the ice ages about every 20,000 years, and the fact, you know, I guess we should be moving into one had it not been for global warming. But I've wondered if there's any evidence or data that indicates whether or not we go or would go into a global cooling, if it occurs slowly over 1,000 years, or if it's more like a light switch where it occurs in a year or a decade. I mentioned to my kids that if we lost a week or a couple weeks of a growing season on either end in the spring and in the fall, that many plants wouldn't grow and we would lose a lot of cropland. So I'm curious to know if your guest has any experience in that.
Mm. Yeah, so I'm trying to remember what the general cycles are. There are cycles of cooling and warming that are driven by how the Earth circulates the sun. And I think the big one that leads to cooling is on the 100,000-year time scale.
Yeah.
And those are generally, as you might imagine, then relatively slow, although I think there are also times where things can switch really quickly. So, you know, you're kind of moving along very slowly, and then all of a sudden something really happens, and then you move right into it really quickly. But I don't remember what those conditions are.
Yeah, and
exactly.
I think it probably, even in that case, it would be a combination of a slowly evolving background condition, like the, is it the called the obliquity of the Earth's revolution around rotation on the axis? The tilt of the Earth goes from 21.5 degrees to 24.5, I think. We're at 23.5 now. So the smaller it is, the less extreme you're going to get in the winter and in the summertime. But the greater it is, of course, greater extreme. So that's one thing that might be going on in about 100,000-year time frame. But you can trigger within the complicated Earth-atmosphere system some things, as Steve says, that feed back positively in the same direction. And they can look like real jumps in a period of 50,000 or 100 years that put you in a place where you can't escape from until the background thing starts to turn the tide the other way. So they don't happen in a week or a month or even a decade, but little incremental changes adding up on top of each other over decades, over hundreds of years, start to push the system into a direction from which it can't return unless those very, very slowly evolving background conditions start to come back the other way.
Wow, interesting. Mike, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill in Cottage Grove, we'll go to you next. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. I have a question. Your guests mentioned November particularly as being a month of transition and notable disasters, weather-related disasters, notably 1975 with the Edmund Fitzgerald. And also earlier in 1913, I believe, the White Hurricane, which was equally bad, and many people died, and people suffered as a result. I'm wondering what it is about November that creates this upheaval in the atmosphere to create this kind of condition.
So am I. But I have some ideas. I think that one of the things that happens as we go past the equinox is that it just stops, the sun stops shining at increasingly lower and lower latitude. And so you can build up fairly large masses of very, very cold air. Roughly at the end of October, probably a little earlier than that, a feature develops in the lower stratosphere that's known as the polar night jet. And that is a very seasonal thing. It comes in mid-October and it ends in about mid-April. Once that gets in there, that can kind of contain the cold air and the high latitudes against easy distribution southward. And then every once in a while, after that containment vessel's been established, you can get substantial changes in the circulation that are momentary, and I'm talking about a week or 2 weeks, that can usher in very, very cold conditions anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere, not just North America. And once that starts to happen in mid-November, then all bets are off. The winter weather starts to hit with full force. And I think it's the contrast between the long period of slow cooling that goes from late August until then and the abrupt arrival of winter that makes that November, the set of storms in November and the effect they have on us feel so dramatic. And it actually is borne out in the statistics. But it's really the first time of the whole cold season that the atmosphere starts to behave as if it's locked into the cold season circulation. I think that's it, but it's a guess.
Hmm. Well, it's more than a guess. This is your research area.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to figure it out.
Bill, does that help?
It helps. Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email to ideas@WPR.org. ideas@WPR.org. I want to go back to that Maisonette setup because I'd like to know how this is organized and I mean, we're going to get one in every county?
Yeah, that's the plan. We looked at purchasing 72 of them. I think Chris is now looking at buying 80 of them. It'll be depending on where we can set it up because we obviously still need some infrastructure in order to get the data beamed out and back to campus and, you know, organized and things like that.
So what does it look like? I mean, is it
It's just a, you know, you would drive by your field and just see a weather station sitting out there. We have, I think the state has about 14 of them right now, but they're maintained, most of them, I think, by Michigan, actually.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, which, again, makes another reason why don't we have one.
Yeah, right.
And then part of the money that we're getting, the funds we're getting from USDA are to organize that so that it becomes, we can distribute it to whoever gets online in the internet and wants to download the data.
So anybody can have a...
Anybody can get at it, yeah. And that's why I think it's going to be so important for the agriculture. And the reason why I really like it, because not only is it going to support research across campus, but it's the Wisconsin idea.
Yeah.
I mean, this
is
going to help the state of the Wisconsin, the people who, you know, beyond the borders of the university.
So it gets right down to actually almost the fields. I mean, if you're a farmer and you've got... Let's say you've got different fields with up to 200 or 300 acres of corn.
And I think that's what you see when you look at other states like Oklahoma and other states that have a well-established Maisonette. That's what they're using it for. They're not just looking at it for the weather events that move through, but what's happening to the soil, temperature and moisture, and how's that impacting the agricultural fields.
Well, yeah. That's going to make a huge difference.
Oh, gigantic positive move. And hopefully it spurs more interest among other funding agencies to say, hey, we've got one per county or roughly. Maybe we can get one per precinct. Maybe we can get a higher density of these observation stations if we can figure out how to make it most efficient. And then the benefit for agriculture goes up, you know, exponentially.
Yeah. So what do these things cost, by the way?
We planned for 72, and they cost $1 million. So
a piece?
No, total. $1 million.
Oh.
So you have to do the division. I don't have my calculator.
So,
my phone
like $20,000 a piece or something like that,
right.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere $15,000 probably. So that's not really all that bad. So let's say if I was a big farmer or if I was somebody that did a lot of construction work or whatever, around this, I might want to have.
I think you'd want to tap into see what's going on.
You'd want to know,
and it'll support other local things. Like I think the cranberry industry also. Mm-hmm. Temperatures are real important for them, so they already have a distribution around for the cranberry industry. You put another couple in that area, and now you get support from their infrastructure as well as our infrastructure.
Yeah,
it's really cool. Yeah. Jeff in Superior, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Well, we're approaching the winter season, and happy holidays, by the way.
To you as well.
From the clouds in the sky, we get snowflakes. Now, is it true that at different points in that process, snowflakes can transform or be changed by the temperature or the wind? So basically what I'm asking is, how are snowflakes made, and aren't they different, and don't they form at different levels of the atmosphere or something?
Yeah, so the shape of a snowflake will depend on the temperature and the humidity in which it grows. And so it's actually fascinating. I'm glad you brought this up. When you have those snowstorms move through, they're all broken up because they're running into each other and the wind's breaking them up and tumbling them. But on those days where it's just a really light snowfall, you know, capture those snow and look at them. Sometimes you'll see different shapes. So you'll see a hexagonal shape, but then on the hexagonal shape, you'll see needles grow out.
Yeah.
And what that tells you is the temperature in the of the environment and the moisture of the environment that snowflake fell through as it came out of the cloud. Because its growth structure, whether it's a needle or your classic stella shape, which is what we cut up in kindergarten, or your plates or even cubes.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's just amazing, and it's fun to watch the type that you'll get.
And depending on where you are in the storm, too, I mean, amazing as it sounds, you can see the transformation over a period of time. Like in New England, where I grew up, we would often get snow that was on the northern edge of a warm front. It was about to change to rain. And boy, was that interesting snowflake-wise, because you'd start out with the first grader hexagonal snowflakes. Yeah. Then you'd get all kinds of other things, bullets and sleet particles and all sorts of other things. And then it would finally turn to rain, and I'd be sad. But here, it doesn't happen so often that we change to rain. And so even though, as Steve points out, the flakes are banging into each other with great force and cracking and breaking into pieces, you can very often characterize the whole snowstorm here in southern Wisconsin by looking at the snow that's falling at one time, because it just doesn't – you don't run the risk of changing phase and going through the whole panoply of different kinds of snowflakes on the way to rain. It's really nice that you don't.
John – Martin and Steve Ackerman, our guests today as we talk climate and weather. Glad to have them with us today. Always fun to have Jill Nadeau stop by as well. She's here to help me talk about our year-end member drive. Your support, really vital to all the programs on WPR. It's our largest source of funding. So please take a few minutes right now to support the programs you count on with your year-end gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you can make an even greater impact when you give right now. So, because $25,000 will be released when 500 people, including you, make a gift in support of WPR programmings by the end of the day tomorrow.
Comes from a group of generous members. They've created this Giving Tuesday challenge to inspire your support of the programs you and your entire community rely on.
So let's meet this challenge. Your gift of any amount now makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, we've been doing this climate and weather program how many years? It's been 25 years. Steve and John have been coming by to talk and answer your questions about weather and climate. It's been really a fun time for them, certainly for me and for Jill, and I hope it's been for you as well. And obviously, they are doing it on their own nickel. It's free, but it costs some money to support, to get that message out to you. And here we are, listener supported. And when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many more hours possible. So I hope you'll choose an amount that works for you. Take a couple of minutes and make your gift.
Yeah, you know, once in a while, you actually get more than you pay for. Not often, but here, you do. WPR is that one place that's true every single day. So consider a gift of $2 a day to support the radio programs that you love.
Hard to buy much for $2 these days, but at Wisconsin Public Radio, $2 a day makes a lot of news, talk, and music possible. That works out to $60 a month, and you can make that gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Hi, I'm Joy.
I'm Scott.
And we're from Madison.
We became sustaining members because we do listen to it every day. We really appreciate it. We thought this is something we want to make sure continues. We are now fixed incomers, but we enjoy this station. It's one of the highlights. I couldn't imagine living anywhere without a public radio station.
Consider becoming a sustainer with a regular monthly gift. Visit WPR.org to get started now.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Your support during our drive makes the programs you rely on possible, and your gift could be $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
And maybe you've already made a donation this year and you're a sustaining member. Well, thank you, thank you. But consider making an extra gift of maybe $50 or $100 at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Join in this drive and thank you for your extra support for the programs that you enjoy every day.
You know, I talk myself into doing it every single drive. I make an extra contribution.
Larry makes no money anymore. He just gives it all back.
Oh, but I like doing it. And, you know, here we had a group of generous members. They're going to give $25,000 in challenge funds when we get 500 people, including you, if you're listening here, to step up and support the programs you count on. And that goes to the end of Tuesday, I believe.
It does. It does. And, of course, you can also choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month. That's a really important thing to give to your community. Mm-hmm. Just go to WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You make a difference for WPR and provide hunger relief to people who need it in your area.
And if you're a sustaining member, thanks so much for that. Maybe today is the day you increase your support of WPR. Maybe it's add $5 or $10 a month or whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Andrew in Fitchburg says, thanks for another great year of programming. Happy to have local shows like Larry Mueller and Central Time. And Anne in Hortonville says, I want to keep a good thing going.
A couple of very smart, good-looking listeners
there.
Andrew
so.
And Anne, thank you so much for that. What about you? Your gift right now is so important at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And thank you. Taking a look at climate and weather, Larry Mueller here with my guest Steve Ackerman and John Martin, both from the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Steve, of course, is Vice Chancellor for Research and Grad Education at UW-Madison as well. Questions? And we've got callers online, so let's go to the phones. Kim and Eau Claire, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hello. Good morning, Larry. I don't know if this is in your guest preview, but I've read that the poles are moving a little faster than usual, like 25 miles they're changing. Do they know about that?
Is this about the magnetic poles where they're located?
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard about that, but I don't know whether or not they're moving faster or slower. I know it's a general cycle in which they change their location, but I don't know how rapidly it's changing.
Yeah, I don't know anything about
it. So it's something that happens
on geological timescales, yeah.
Mm. Oh.
In fact, they'll even flip around. And so at some point, the South Pole magnetic field will be like the North Pole magnetic field and vice versa.
Then we're all upside down?
And then we're all upside down in a floating space.
Yeah. I mean, if it happens during the technological era, that would be interesting. There'd be a lot of ramifications.
Yeah.
There'd never have been any otherwise.
Oh,
right.
I gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, with our airwaves.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's something we can look into a little bit, Kim. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Maybe we can take that up next month.
Mm. Yeah, that would be interesting. And, you know, also when they flip, I don't know how long that flipping is, but, you know, the magnetic field also protects us from solar flares.
So, oh, that's right, yeah.
In the middle of losing that protection when a solar flare comes, then
yeah, you don't want that.
Problem. You don't want that.
No. Jeff in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, Larry, and good morning, weather guys. Mm-hmm. And you guys are the best, and the reason for that is your moniker. You're simply known as the weather guys, nothing fancy smancy. That's awesome. I do have a question for you, though, and you guys have all the answers. Something has been perplexing me recently. I downsized out of my house into my apartment, and now I have the drab task of making ice cubes. So there's something going on here I can't figure out. So I'll take four trays, I'll fill them all, I'll stack them four high in my freezer, give them 24 hours, and I'll pull them out. Now, for some reason, here's what happens. The very top tray, I'll crack open, they just slide right out, smooth as butter. Second tray, I get some crunchies in it. Third tray down the line, I get a lot more crunchies, and by the time I get the last tray on the very bottom, it's like nothing but cracked ice. Any thoughts on that?
Interesting.
That's really interesting.
That is really interesting. Until you described the last tray, I was wondering if the first tray, you know, as you're stacking them up, the ones on the bottom are going to have insulation, essentially.
Yeah,
the trays thinking
above. Conduction, too.
And so I was wondering with the top tray, if it came out so easy because it was actually getting colder. And so they, as they get colder, they condense.
Yeah.
At least until they get the 4 Celsius, and then they begin to expand again.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they get...
Which goes against what I was initially thinking, actually.
Well, but except for this, maybe there's conduction that's going on in the column, because I don't know, Jeff, if the containers for each of the ice cubes actually touch the water underneath the one, you know, on in the stack. If they touch at all, then, and even if they don't, there might be some conduction and convection, but the conduction might be working in such a way that the top one is where you lose all of the heat, but the one at the bottom kind of has trouble losing heat and so doesn't perhaps freeze as solidly, and that ends up, when it finally does get frozen, it's in little chunks instead of a solid ice cube.
Yeah.
So it might be a conduction effect.
But
I don't know.
I would leave it in there for more than 24 hours. You know, leave it and see if that changes your bottom tray.
Yeah, or separate the trays so that you know for sure they're not touching at all, except by like a piece of wood or something between, and see if there's any difference.
Yeah.
And if the trays are any different.
Yeah, if the trays themselves are different. Then
switch them around and see if it makes a difference.
Yeah.
That's another.
Are they metal trays or rubber trays?
They're plastic and they're all identical.
Yeah. Okay.
If they're like the ones I have, then they do touch each other a little bit, and that could be the thing. Yeah, if you make a big stack, the bottom one just stays a little bit warmer at the initial cooling stage because all the heating is going off into the freezer at the top. All that heat's conducted to the top.
Yeah, that's probably the last one to really freeze hard would be the bottom one. Yeah. Something to think about, Jeff.
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. So maybe somebody else has an idea about it. They can call in, too, and throw their 2 cents worth in. Number, by the way, is 800-642-1234. If you got a question or a comment, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Deborah in Winona, Minnesota, we go to you now. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I grew up in western Wisconsin in the 1950s and 1960s, and way back then, it wasn't nearly as windy as it is now. We would have maybe a couple of days a week with light breezes, and now it seems like it's windy nearly every day. And I noticed the shift in maybe the 1980s, and I'm wondering if this is because of climate change or just a shift in weather patterns.
I don't know yet if an increase in wind has been found in the data sets. It's found in people's recollections. And that's one thing, and that's important. But I don't know if we're seeing that in the observations at National Weather Service primary stations, observations like at La Crosse, Green Bay, Madison, and Milwaukee. So I don't know what to say about that. If it actually is getting windier, I would attribute it to a difference in the way the storms are propagating across North America. And that has not been something that I've seen anybody direct considerable research attention to recently. However, I don't, and maybe the attention is lacking because the data simply doesn't support the anecdotal sense that it's windier now than it used to be. It may just appear that way. It's hard to know.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to know. Well, it's never hard to know when Jill Nadeau is around because she's usually makes her presence known.
Are you saying I'm loud, Larry?
She fills up a room with her voice. That's what she does. And here she is back to talk about our year-end member drive. Because we're right at the top of the hour, that's why I want to help have you join in and support the programs you rely on all year long with your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And in case you haven't heard, today is the start of a really special two-day Giving Tuesday challenge. A group of very generous members will give $25,000 in matching funds when 500 people, including you, step up to support the programs that you count on.
It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting the programs that inform and inspire you and the rest of the state.
And your there I go again. I can't say this word today. What the heck?
Participation.
Thank you, Larry. Your participation now is vital. Be one of the 500 people to meet this challenge before the end of the day tomorrow. Join the Giving Tuesday celebration now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, this program is always so much fun to do with John and Steve. They know so much, and where else are you going to get this kind of information? Where else do you get a chance to call up a weather guy and
ask your questions?
A question. You can do it because it's listener supported. We are listener supported, and that means when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you make this hour, this program, and many more programs possible. So please choose an amount that works for you. Take a couple of minutes and then make your gift.
During this member drive, we have a special offering. Ask for one of the food bank thank you gifts. There are options available at $10 or $20 a month. And your donation to WPR will power essential news and quality entertainment. And your thank you gift will provide hunger relief to people in your community. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
What are your year-end traditions?
Kind of doing a whirlwind through my house and ridding myself of possessions.
My family all goes hunting up north and come back in time for the Thanksgiving meal at my aunt's farm.
We always have a party where we make lots of food.
Start a new tradition this year. Support the information and inspiration you rely on from Wisconsin Public Radio. Give now and every year. Here's how.
Here we go. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 to make your donation this time of the year during our year-end member drive. Larry Mueller with Jill Nadeau. And the WPR programs you enjoy are possible thanks to your support and your contribution, $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, it makes a difference for your community.
Absolutely. And tomorrow is Giving Tuesday. And to celebrate, a group of generous members have come together to create a challenge to inspire you to support WPR. And over the next 2 days, when 500 people give, WPR will secure an additional $25,000.
I'll have to look up and see how many have already done that.
Well, my screen here says 32. Oh, no, 38.
38.
Since we started this morning. I don't know, Larry. I think we need to get people going here.
I think we do. But it's still good. I'm glad that we have 38 people contributing. What about you? Your gift, it's going to really help. Donate any amount, as a matter of fact, at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552. and you'll join this exciting challenge.
And, you know, I love that WPR lets you choose how much that you give. And a contribution of any amount makes a difference. So here are some suggestions. So the same amount you pay for your monthly, oh, I don't know, Netflix or HBO or whatever, or cable. And that's expensive.
Disney Plus.
That's right. Yeah.
Or your daily cup of coffee, which, like WPR, is probably something you look forward to. Give now. The amount you choose, well, it's up to you. Your gift makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And don't forget about Giving Tuesday Challenge. It's still in effect, and that's 500 people have to make a gift to WPR by the end of the day tomorrow, and we'll get an extra $25,000 from generous members, and that's going to be secured to secure your programs that you rely on.
And you can provide hunger relief in your area, by the way.
Yes.
You ask for one of the food bank thank you gifts with your donation of $10 or $20 a month right now. It starts with your contribution, though, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And now is a great time to become a sustaining member. It's easy to set up. It's convenient. Ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card. So get started at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We are going to go away for a quick break, but we'll be right back after the news, and we'll be talking again with Steve Ackerman and John Martin. They're happy to be here. Hope you're happy to be listening. Make your donation. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Taking a look at climate and weather on the show today with Steve Ackerman, Vice Chancellor for Research and Grad Education at UW-Madison, also a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, as is John Martin, our other weather guy. Great to have them back, and certainly questions join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org. Let's take a call from Todd in Eau Claire. Todd, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Serendipitously, I came across a reference a couple of months ago to some sort of climate event that occurred about 12,000 years ago, something about abrupt cooling followed by 1,800 years later and abrupt warming. Are your guests familiar with that? And are there any theories about the cause of that?
So is this the retreat of the ice sheets? That would be about 12,000 years ago.
Well, right? My understanding is that something out of the Greenland ice cores recorded a rapid cooling event followed approximately 1,800 years later with a rapid warming event.
I think there was an article on that National Geographic.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't remember reading that.
Yeah, me either. I don't know about that kind of high-frequency report about that long ago.
Ah,
it's very interesting.
Well, it's another one to look up and
we can
talk about
the
next
advantage
time.
of the Greenland ice cap too is if they did a core of ice from which they made this conjecture, then there'd probably be dust and various other things in the ice too that could tell a story about whether the storm tracks were different in that 1800 year period and all that. So there's a lot probably to unwrap in that story, and maybe they're just beginning to crack it open now. That's very interesting, though.
Yeah. Well, we'll look into it, Todd, and see what else we can come up with. Thanks a lot for calling. Anne emailed us a question. She asks, following the question about November storms, Steve said to John, this is your area of research. And Anne would like to have John explain what the area actually is. What is he researching?
Oh, actually, Steve's a little bit off on that. I'm more interested in the transition from winter to spring, but I'm equally interested in just winter storms generally. So the transition from fall to winter is really interesting. What happens to the circulation around the hemisphere in terms of, does it rev up? Does it become higher amplitude and therefore more able to develop, impactful weather systems all of a sudden? What are the mechanisms that drive the change from mid-October to mid-November? I really would like to understand that. And the way I'm trying to do it on the other end of the cold season, but I think would be the same method I'd use on the front end, is trying to understand how do the polar latitudes interact with the tropical latitudes. And especially insofar as how they might work in concert to develop particularly robust storms that can do a lot of moving of warm and cold air around and change things kind of rapidly. So that's the basic idea, is how do the polar and tropical latitudes interact during those transition seasons. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out.
And you look at it, the waviness.
Yeah, how wavy is the flow?
Than that, but
yeah, that is the term I use. How wavy is the flow? So how high amplitude are the ridges and troughs in the atmospheric flow? And in the cold season, the last 75 years, the flow has been getting wavier, both in the subtropics and in the extratropics during the wintertime. I don't yet know what happens in the transition seasons, and that's part of, as Steve points out, that's part of probably the story that has to be unraveled.
Parsed
still.
Out, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Tim in Kalamazoo, Michigan emailed. He wonders, how much does the sun influence our climate and weather on Earth? Can solar winds and sun surface temperature impact our weather? Any monitoring or correlation studies on this?
So there's been correlation studies with the number of sunspots and weather, and they've been largely causation as correlation, not causation. I think where we really have interactions with the sun and our temperatures on the climate scale associated with the orbit of how Earth goes around the sun, and then with solar flares, that's more of messing up with our electronic field.
Yeah.
So there, if we really have, and we had this in the past, in the 1800s, I think, where a really big solar flare hit pretty much directly on Earth. And just even then, we didn't have much technology. But even then, the Morse code stations and things like that, some of them would just fry. So the real worry is if we get another one of those now where we rely so much more on technology than we did back in the 1800s.
Yeah.
So our news. Cell phones are, well, everything.
Air traffic control network, things
pretty much,
like that.
I mean, you think about everything now that's running on the internet.
Would we know that was coming?
It's actually a big field, isn't it now? Yeah. Space weather, forecasts of solar events. Yeah, so it's because of this threat, I think. We try to turn our satellites to looking at some of that stuff.
And I think we'll see it before it actually hits Earth, but we won't be able to do anything.
Yeah, there's not much you can do. Right. You can't hide. You can't go like this.
Right.
But you could, I imagine you could, well, I don't know.
You might be able to
turn off your phone.
Turn things off, right.
Yeah, yeah.
That might be the best thing to do.
And planes would have to, I mean,
the coordination really to do that, though, would be immense.
I wonder what the World Aviation Organization, whatever it might be called now, would do in such a case. If you had a four-day warning that the whole system is really in peril because of this big solar event, don't fly on that Thursday, anybody.
Yeah.
And just everybody gets delayed
a day.
That I
could see, downing the planes, right?
Yeah,
because that would be a real safety thing.
Yeah.
I guess I was thinking of people you know, turning off all the electricity in their house. Well, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, especially if it happened in the winter time. Although even in the summer, if it's 95 degrees out.
Yeah, then you get air conditioning problem.
You get your air conditioner on.
Yeah. Oh, sounds like a disaster movie in the making.
Yeah, no kidding. Huh?
for sure. Ann, by the way, wonders if a different Ann in Milwaukee, this one, wonders if the 6 feet of snow in Buffalo, was there about 6 inches of rain connected with,
what's the ratio? Yeah. You know, I think that's a good question. I think lake effect snows usually have a slightly higher ratio snow to liquid equivalent than 10 to 1, the traditional 10 to 1. But I think that this one was early enough in the season that there was complaints about the snow being very heavy. Now, I don't know if that means that it was about a 10 to 1 ratio, but 6 feet would be 72 inches of snow. I don't believe they got 7 inches of rain equivalent there, but I don't know the answer to that. I guess it was more like 3.5 or 4.
Mm. Sharon in Minocqua has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Larry. Another wonderful program.
Thank you.
My question relates to barometric pressure, which I don't understand, but I have. I'm curious as to whether or not the what we put in the atmosphere, like carbon, as well as all of this water that we're water vapor, water molecules, because I see that our use of water, you know, draining all of our you know, underground aquifer systems and putting that up on the surface or into the atmosphere, would that have any impact on barometric pressure? And or just curious as to what causes the drops and the increases in barometric pressure?
Great question. The carbon dioxide is about 400 molecules per million of a million molecules in the atmosphere. So it has an almost negligible impact on the mass of the atmosphere from the perspective you're asking. Water vapor is a little different. It's maybe 4 in 100 on the most humid day. So it's a little bit more extreme, but it rains in and out of the atmosphere in a very regular cycle, very short time scales, 9 days or so. Every time a water vapor molecule evaporates, it resides in the atmosphere before getting rained out for about a week. So it doesn't accumulate and can't have much to do with the substantial pressure changes from day to day. However, the thing that drives the atmospheric pressure changes is just simply moving air from one column of the atmosphere to another one. And that's done by the dynamics of the fluid flow. And it's a great problem. It's it's the central problem I've thought about for my entire life, as it turns out, since about high school physics. And that was 35, 40 years ago. So I've been thinking about this very problem for a long, long time, made some progress by stepping on the shoulders of giants who've come before me. And we have a pretty good understanding what is it that drives the air to move from one column to the other. And it usually involves vertical motions and export of mass that way. And that's how you can lower or raise the pressure, just moving the atmosphere around in systematic, well-organized columns of ascent and descent of the air. So it's a fascinating problem.
Yeah. Sharon, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Listener emailed us about ice cubes again. They have the same issue, that the cubes at the bottom crack but not on the top. And with their ice cubes, they only have a stack of two trays, and it doesn't matter which of the trays is on the bottom or the top.
It's some conduction thing, I think.
Hey, you know, I'm glad that they had this problem with two trays, because I was thinking of doing this over the weekend, and I was like, I don't know if I have room for four trays. But if I can do it with two, I can try different experiments and see what happens.
Well, speaking of researching, Steve, somebody else is wondering about your vice chancellor for research and graduate education. What the heck do you do?
Oh, boy. We do a lot of things. For one, we oversee graduate education as well. So the dean of the graduate school reports to me. And that's important, I think, because research and graduate education are so coupled together. The other thing we do is we oversee compliance. So if you want to do a study that involves humans, you need to go through our process to get approval to make sure you're following all federal guidelines. And I think the most fun thing from my perspective is we get a lot of resources from the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, and we invest those. So we invest them in the Meso Network. It was one example. Mm-hmm. Startups for new faculty, we invest there. We run competitions across campus where people have ideas or they have a grant that they want to submit, but they need some preliminary data. Then we'll provide those resources to do that research. So it's kind of a lot of fun. In that regard, because we're investing in research across campus, in all fields, in all divisions, and, you know, watching it grow.
Do we have any – well, we do have an idea, I believe, of how many projects or how much research – how many research projects are going on or the value of those? I mean
– We do. We participate in a NSF-run HERD survey. It's called the Higher Education Research Something. And those results will be coming out in December, but we've invested, we spent, so this is research expenditures, I think it's about $1.4 billion last year. So a lot of resources happen on this campus with regard to research.
$1.4 billion, wow.
That's a lot. But if you think about the work we do, the individuals, so that's, you know, paying for the individuals to do their research, the infrastructure, all of that just adds up to about $1.4 billion, which is a pretty big contribution.
pretty big number.
It's a pretty big
university
number.
Returns $26 for every dollar that the state invests in it back to the state economy.
Right.
That's part of the reason why.
That's right.
26-1, and that's not good enough for some people.
Yeah.
They need a better return.
They need a better return. Right.
Well, on that happy note, somebody did wonder, is it going to be cold or a cold winter?
I would say that the chances are better than even that we'll have something that looks more like a normal winter. We don't have anything going on in the tropical Pacific that would tend the other way. And so that gets us the wide, unpredictable expanse of more than likely a normal winter. That's what I would say.
Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys, always great to have them come by and talk climate and weather. Always good to have Jill Nadeau stop by, too. Here we are in our member drive, our year-end member drive, and your gift right now. It really does ensure the programs you rely on have a strong start in 2023. You make WPR programs possible as we head into the new year. When you give, how do you do that? Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And you can make an even greater impact when you give right now. $25,000 will be released when 500 people make a gift in support of WPR programs by the end of day tomorrow.
A group of generous members have created this Giving Tuesday challenge to inspire you and for you to support the programs that you rely on and your entire community relies on.
You bet. And let's meet this challenge. Your gift of any amount now makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, I think about some of the guests, Jill, that we have on all the time. Our weather guys, Steve and John, have been doing this for 25 years.
Yeah.
The last Monday of the month for all those years. Jesse LeGrew, Beth D'Angelo, they help us with our computer and tech problems. PJ Leash, Phil Pelletieri, they answer our questions about endless questions about insects.
They are endless. Yes.
Yeah, Melinda Myers, we got nationally known gardening expert, one of many hundreds,
yes,
that we've had.
Yep, for sure. And you get great information that you can use from these guests and so many others on this program. And together, we get to the bottom of your questions. It's all possible with your gift. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, one of the cool things I like about the drive is it's a chance for you to provide some hunger relief in your area as well. You can ask for a food bank thank you gift when you give $10 a month or more today. So thanks very much for making a difference for your neighbors in your community and for the WPR programs you love at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And so many food banks these days are really stretched, especially at this time of the year. So that's a wonderful thing to do. You know, you might be a procrastinator. And our year-end member drive, well, it's for you. You've been thinking all year that you love WPR. You listen every day. You value the programs. You should really donate.
And you can still do it, Joe.
You can. Isn't that amazing? We give you that opportunity.
Now is your time. Right now. Step up and be counted. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And you might think that you don't have to support WPR because someone else is. Well, WPR has been around for years because thousands of people have made the decision to support something that's important to them.
Yeah, and now it's time for you to make that decision as well. Many first-time donors give $10 or $20 a month. You choose what works best for you, but now is the time. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now let's admit it. Sometimes we spend money on silly things.
I blew my $8 on this cable. I've got another cable just sitting around the house doing nothing.
Postage to send a care package to my son in Texas that was outrageously expensive.
It might have been dryer sheets on Amazon.
It's pretty easy to make a questionable decision about how we spend our money, and it can be just as easy, and not a bad idea, to make a few sound investments along the way, like supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is the single largest source of funding at WPR, so make a sound investment with your gift to WPR right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That is correct. Give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Make your contribution during our year-end member drive. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Listener support is the biggest source of our funding, and that's why your gift of $10 a month or $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, has an important impact.
And I don't know about you, but I kind of like to do things that are easy occasionally, and giving to WPBR is easy. All we need is your name, your contact info, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
I can tell you from experience, many times over the course of a year during these drives, I make an additional pledge. And I have found that it takes just a couple of minutes to make that contribution. And those few minutes fund my daily listening and yours as well. Your support right now makes a big difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And the beauty of this is that everyone should make the gift that works for them. And for you, that might be a gift of $100 or $200 a month.
Maybe that's what you pay for cable or your family phone plan. Listening is something you do every day at WPR. Put a value on it, like other things that are important to you. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And as we look ahead to 2023, we are so grateful that Wisconsin Public Radio has such strong listener support. It's one gift at a time. Listeners provide our largest source of funding. And if you haven't given yet this year, now's the time. And if you have given this year, well, we'd appreciate your extra year-end gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We do want you to give the amount that's comfortable for you. Many people give $10 a month. Some give $100 a month or even more.
Yep, whatever amount you give, it'll support the programs that enhance your life, that give you the information and entertainment every day. So give now, whatever amount works for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Why is it important to do it right now? Well, a group of generous members will give $25,000 in challenge funds when we get 500 people, including you, to step up and support the programs you count on. And that goes on to the end of tomorrow, I believe.
That's right, because tomorrow is Giving Tuesday. So you can choose also when you give one of the food bank gifts, and that'll be at the $10 or $20 a month level, or if you give more, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You'll make a difference for WPR and provide hunger relief to people in your community.
And if you're a sustaining member, make today the day you increase your support by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And Paul in Egg Harbor says, I'm giving to support WPR's great and creative programming, like Larry Mueller with guest Dr. Scott Craven.
Well, Dr. Scott Craven is a good guy. He's another one of our regulars who's been on for even longer than 25 years.
Yes.
We've been doing this a long time, and we have a lot of fun here on this show.
I wanted to tell you, Larry, that we are up to 47 gifts, so we got almost 10 just in the last half hour or so. So thank you.
Your gift right now is so important at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Tell you what, if you haven't done it yet, do it right now. Help us make that 500 goal. Tomorrow, by the way, the author of a cookbook, More Than Snow, joins us to teach about winter foraging and cookies you can make using what you find outside.
They sound awesome, Larry. They use pine needles and all kinds of all the stuff you learn on WPR. It's amazing.
Give right now, WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and thank you.